Yeah. What's going on, guys? This is Tariq Radio. I am your gracious host. I'm Tariq Nasheed, guys, and it's the late night chop up. We're here. Let everybody know that we're live right now. We're going to have a real good conversation tonight. Thank you for all the people who stayed up to chop it up with me. It's pretty late right now, but it's all great. Retweet this, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, let everybody know we're live. What we're going to do, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to get right into the game right here on Tariq Radio. Don't you move a muscle.
Listen up, squares. You need to get the legendary book on game, The Art of Mackin', by author Tariq King Flex Nasheed. Available on Amazon right now. Can you dig it? This book has been a bestseller for 20 years, Jack. And the New York Times called it a classic. That means it's out of sight. So this book ain't for no lames who ain't trying to learn the game, jive turkeys. So if you're ready to stop slacking in your mackin', get the Art of Mackin' book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble right now, sucker. Rated PG. That stands for plenty of game, jive chumps.
Tune in to the Amiri Brown Show on YouTube, where they discuss all topics intrinsic to the Black experience, from dating and marriage to race, economics, social issues, and politics. Subscribe to the Amiri Brown Show channel and tune in throughout the week. Make Black America great again or die trying.
Bro, stop playing and start spraying. Leave a op on the ground where you stand. At all costs, yeah, make sure you protect it. Old goon juice, the formula been tested. You can defend yourself if you find that you need a little help. Gotta stay ready, ain't no love in the street. Pepper spray straight to the face, make them get weak. Get it at oldgoonjuice.com. If they thinking you slipping, then tell them to come get them some. If you packing this, you won't be lacking. A shot to the eye in them problems you having. Maximal strip, hit them haters on ground, so you can feel free when you out in the town. Old goon juice, and don't forget a shark, man. You gotta stay ready, that evil on lurk. Yeah.
Okay. You are now tuned into the legendary OG. Tariq Nasheed.
I want to apologize to all my friends.
On Tariq Radio.
Where is Tariq getting all this cash?
Oh, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. Glad to have y'all tuning in. I told you the commercial wasn't going to be that long. We're here. Glad to have y'all tuning in. Shout out to all the overseas fam over in the chat room on YouTube. Where my family from London. If you're from the UK, you're from overseas in a different time zone. Let me see a peace sign, family. Let me see a peace sign from you. Man, there's a few things we got to get into. Later on in the broadcast, and this is not going to be too long of a broadcast, but we are going to play this clip. DJ Vlad, he kind of threw some shots at me on one of his recent broadcasts he had on DJ Academic, and I guess they might have been talking about me off air or whatever, but yeah, Vlad threw some shots. Oh, Vlad threw him some little old shots. We're going to get into that later on. I'm just waiting on everybody to get in here. So while we're waiting on everybody to get in here, let's get on some other things right now. Did y'all see Stacey Dash? Stacey Dash did a video, a TikTok video, crying about the death of DMX. She just found out that DMX died. How out of touch are you? She found out that DMX died, so she's all crying on TikTok and talking about drug use and how she's, 6 years clean or something like that. It was real weird. But what was real weird about it was she's about 4 or 5 tones lighter. I thought it was a white woman at first. Did y'all see? Let me show y'all that. I'm going to try to play some of it because I don't want to get a copyright strike because there's music in the background. But yeah, Stacey Dash, man, I thought this was a white woman right here. Look at this. When I saw it, I'm like, who is this white woman? And then it was like, oh, it's Stacey Dash. She got her cake soap game on. Now, you know she's non-FBA. She's like Mexican in Barbados or something like that. So this is Stacey Dash talking about the death of DMX. I guess she just found out DMX died. Hold on 1 second. Hold on.
Okay, y'all. I'm ashamed. I didn't know.
Lord, what is she talking
about? I didn't know DMX died. Wow. I didn't know.
Okay. Okay, so it's like an acting audition. I don't know what she's doing. Hold on. Okay, let me get this together. Hold on. All right. So, yeah, it's real weird, man. It's real weird. I really don't even want to go in on her. She's going through some stuff right now. Well, this woman is her mama Mexican? Yeah, she done got hit with that Metal La Raza stuff, man. That's that Metal La Raza. This woman has been on this tragic mulatto thing, and that Latino culture, it does numbers on black people who are attached to that. It does psychological numbers on black folks who's connected with that. This is what it does to you. I did No Jumper the other day, and that should be out probably this week, probably next week. And we chopped up some real good game. Shout out to Flacco. Flacco's a solid guy when it comes to me. We chopped up some real good game, and we really tackled that whole the black and brown thing that's been talked about, and the one-sided strife, because it's really one-sided. There's a lot of anti-black hatred, and I talked about this coming from the Latino community. And we cannot have a black-brown coalition when you have this Metal La Raza mindset that's been happening for centuries over there in the Latino culture. And it's decidedly anti-black. And nobody on that side likes to address that. And this is a product of that right now. This right here, this is what it does to black people psychologically. You see? This is why we're so strong about protecting our culture, because we're not going to have groups of people practice this vile anti-black racism against us and then try to latch on to our culture. This is why we're real big on gatekeeping and taking back foundational black American hip-hop, because again, this is our culture that we created on our own. This conversation has been getting a lot of traction online, and we're going to start the documentary about it, and everybody's shaking in their boots about this documentary because they know this thing is going to really get some straightening going. And family, we are still trying to find a name for this documentary. Y'all know this is going to be a monumental thing. You already know, family, that this documentary about the real origins of hip-hop, this is going to change the entire game. People are copping pleas already. People are shaking in their boots. We're going to straighten out the narrative once and for all. Because for so long, the history of it has been deliberately jumbled. They jumble up the stuff that happened in the 70s. What we hear is that there was a party that Kool Herc threw in 1973. And then there's this dark spot, this blind spot that don't nobody know what happened until 1979. And then Rapper's Delight came out and bam, hip hop went worldwide. And everybody jumbles up what happened between 73 and 79. That story gets all jumbled up and convoluted and it gets thrown all over the place and nobody brings clarity to that. We are going to bring clarity to that, ladies and gentlemen. Because it's been deliberately jumbled. And if you jumble something up, you can attach any false history to it. That's why they keep talking about, yeah, the black people over here got it from Jamaicans and Latinos helped create it too, which was a lie. And they know that history in the middle of 73 and 79 is jumbled up. They know it's jumbled up. So people will believe anything because it's so jumbled up. We're going to unstraighten the jumbling, okay? The jumbling is going to be on. We're straightening all of that out. We're going to have a chronological timeline of who did what. We're clearing all of that up, family. We're going to talk about the unsung foundation of Black American heroes that they keep trying to leave out. Disco King Mario, Grandmaster Flowers, Pete DJ Jones, A1 B-Boy Sosa. So many people. I want to hear about the real people who were there during the formation. And these are the people who come out, like Trixie, who's one of the original B-Boys. And I played the clip of him. He was like, hey, wasn't no Puerto Ricans around us doing no breaking? Wasn't no Puerto Ricans around us. So I believe them, family. When you talk to these old school cats who are from the Bronx, who were of age, because I don't want to hear nobody talk about, yeah, I'm from the Bronx. How are you going to tell me? But damn it, you were 4 years old when they were creating hip hop. You weren't around. You were in diapers. The cats who were around for real, of age, who were going to the parties, they all say the same thing. This was something that we, strictly Black people, created. It was no Caribbean influence and definitely wasn't no Puerto Ricans. And I believe them. So people are throwing all types of lies. They're throwing everything out there. They're trying to attach Latino culture to hip hop so many different ways. They're talking about, well, such and such, Joe Conzo, he's Puerto Rican and he took pictures. So what? Taking pictures don't mean you created something. You see, we're getting to the truth of this thing. Yeah, the Green Eye Genie, I'm familiar with him. He's out there, but he knows that brother be having the facts, though. That brother has a lot of the facts straight. So we're on this thing, man. We're going to get this thing cleared up. Now, people want to cop, please, now. Well, why we got to be beefing about all that? Shout out to DJ Star Star from Star and Buck Wild. He did a broadcast on it the other day, and he was very fair, and he was very objective. He had Crazy Legs call up, and he basically gave them enough rope to hang themselves. It was a couple of people that racist Jen chick called up. I mean, she's just be trolling. She don't know nothing. But Crazy Legs basically admitted that, no, they didn't really create nothing. He basically admitted it. Star got that dude to basically admit he didn't really create any breaking. But then he tried to say some stuff like, well, we created moves within breaking, you know, like the certain type of back spins. We did a elbow spin. No, Star, shout out to him. He did a great, great interview getting a lot of that stuff straight in a very objective way. He basically let a lot of them bury themselves with what they were trying to bring to the table. See, family, we have to understand. The whole narrative is to really erase foundational Black Americans away from our culture. That's what this is about at the end of the day. This is to erase us from our culture. That's what all of these people do, these vultures. This is what they do with us when it's something constructive. I've always said this. When we create something constructive, everybody has to vulture off of it. The only thing we get full exclusive credit for are negative things, just negatory. Then we'll get credit for that. But when it's constructive, everybody has to get credit, or we have to give credit to Africa. Because I notice a lot of these Latino guys who try to push this, well, they helped start hip hop and all that. When we debunk that, when you debunk that, and when we start asking for receipts and they start splaining and backpedaling, they'll go to the, well, you know, at the end of the day, we all African, family. Y'all better shut that down whenever they try that nonsense. Don't let them pull that we all African stuff. That's a con game. Because if we're all African, why are you so hell-bent on using the term Latino to differentiate the different groups? You're the one trying to differentiate. If we were just all Black, why the hell are you running around talking about Latino, Latino, Latino? So you're contradicting yourself talking about, well, we all Black. Y'all the ones yelling about Latino. You understand? Let's keep it a buck. Because listen, these people know. They understand that they're lying. They know they're lying. They just hope we don't know enough about music to call them out. There was one fool who hopped on Twitter talking about, well, the first person to sing over some hip-hop beats was Lisa and Cult Jam. So Latinos are a part of creating certain things, and we had to straighten that dumb fool out. Folks, black people have been singing over hip-hop beats from the beginning. Go back to the Planet Patrol. The song Play It At Your Own Risk, 1982. They were singing over Planet Rock. These are some brothers from Boston, black men. There's a sister down in Miami. What's her name? Shannon, who did Let the Music Play. That was a hip-hop dance beat she was singing over. We've been doing that. Go back to 1979, the Funky Four Plus One More. They were singing and rapping over the record they put out in 1979, Rapping and Rocking the House. They were singing and rapping over it. Even certain rap crews, when they would be at the parties and at the jams, they would do harmony. Cold Crush Brothers, they would harmonize over certain beats. Grandmaster Flash and those guys would sing and harmonize over certain beats. So we've always been doing that. Yeah, Lisa definitely was not the first. Come on now. We've been doing that since the beginning. The Us Girls on Beat Street. Debbie D, Chi-Rock, is it Lisa Lee, the other one? They were singing on the Us Girls song. Come on. The Sequence. We're going to funk you right on up. We're going to funk you right on up. Come on, man. With Angie Stone and The Sequence. Come on, dude. We've been doing this. You dig? So this is why we have to know our history. So when folks come around with the BS, we know how to shut it down. We shut that stuff down very quick because, look, we exclusively created that. And not only did we create hip hop exclusively, we were creating parallel genres. What were the Puerto Ricans or Latinos creating at the time? If they created hip hop, how come they didn't create any type of other parallel genre? Because they didn't create hip hop. They had no bearing in the creation of hip hop in any element. None. That's not an insult. That's just history. Y'all have your own thing. Do you. This is our thing. We don't have to share false history. We don't have to create a false history and share that. No, that's disrespectful. We got to stop this thing. We were creating not only hip hop at the same time, we had parallel genres. Funk, remember, funk began right before hip hop, like a small period before. So we had the genre of funk going on around the same time, and hip hop came out of funk, and also we had disco as a genre going on at the same time. So we had three parallel genres going at the same time that we created. That's how thorough we are. You understand? They were complementary genres to each other. You see? And also with hip hop, man, the sixth element of hip hop has always been a certain black consciousness, not a Latino consciousness. You had the Black Spades, and you had other people who were getting a lot of the 5%er lessons at that time, because that was a wave around the late 60s, early 70s. There were a lot of people under the tutelage of Clarence 13X, so you had a lot of 5%ers. You had a lot of those cats doing the 52 blocks. That was coming out of the 5%er thing, so that was a big thing. We got to tell all of it, man. We got to tie all this stuff in. We got to tie all this stuff in. There was a black consciousness to it. That was the sixth element. You understand? That whole I'm black and I'm proud vibe. The Black Panthers were still a thing, you know, during the creation of hip hop. So there was a black consciousness thing there. This was all black. Let's not be ashamed of owning up to our culture. We don't have to share it with everybody. You know what? The thing is, why so many artists are not saying anything about this, black artists, as they should be saying something. They don't want to offend people in the dominant society. That's why they're not saying anything about it. Especially a lot of these dudes who, you know, who came out of the 70s and 80s, some of these old school cats, they're not really going to say nothing because, like I said before, they go on these hip-hop tours and most of the audience are white and Latino. So they don't want to offend the paying audience. That's how they're eating right now. That's how they're eating right now. They're eating off the white and Latino audiences. So that's why they have to be on this all-inclusive thing. And another thing why they don't want to come out and really tell the truth, because see, a lot of these dudes, let's keep it a buck, a lot of these dudes out there have Puerto Rican baby mamas. These niggas be laying up with them Puerto Rican women. They got kids by these Puerto Rican women. And Hispanic cooch is kryptonite to niggas. It, to some niggas, man, it is kryptonite to them. If they want to pacify a Negro, give him some Hispanic cooch. Let's keep it a buck, even out here in L.A. That's why a lot of dudes be out here copping pleas with these essays, because a lot of these dudes be out here laying up with these Mexican bras. They got them a little Mexican baby mama somewhere. And plus, especially these hip-hop artists out here, they're dependent on these Mexican-run radio stations with all of the program directors are Hispanic, and the little jams out here, the radio show jams, most of the audience is Hispanic, so they don't want to rock the boat. We got a bunch of these not wanting to rock the boat niggas out here who will go up and go along with these goofy programs knowing it's not true, but they're just getting their little chump bag out of it. You see? Let's keep it a buck. Dudes are weak for that Spanish cooch, that Hispanic cooch. That's what it is. And y'all better get off that, man, because you shoot yourselves in the foot. You're destroying your own legacy for some Spanish cooch. That's been, Hispanic cooch has been kryptonite and a detriment to the Negro mind for the last 800 years. Notice I didn't say 500, I said 800 years. Because this started in Spain with the damn Moors. That's why the Moors got defeated. The Moors, black men over there who had different individual kingdoms in Al-Andalus, which was Moorish Spain, they had all of these little splinter kingdoms, and they're fighting each other over these Spanish white women over there, getting all distracted. And while they're fighting each other over the Spanish cooch, the white males had the Reconquista and start getting all of them out of there. That Spanish cooch has been a problem for niggas for 800 years. They get a little Spanish cooch and don't know how to act. And then forget about your legacy, your history. You let the whole kingdom burn down because you getting your pee-pee wet with the Hispanic chicks. Man up and put some Mac bones in your body and control that. I'm not the ding-a-ling police, but damn, nigga, control your Mackin at least. Nigga, put some steroids on your Mackin so that it'll strengthen up and you can stand strong against that cooch getting all in your brain, man. Y'all Negroes know who you are. Up here copping, please. Y'all copping, please, because you got Puerto Rican and Mexican baby mamas. Well, some of them, there's Negroes out here, well, they Hispanics might not have created hip-hop, but just, they were around, so I grew up with them. Stop, nigga. Stop it. You dig? Everybody hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Everybody hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. See, family, the thing is, listen, and we're going to get into the Vlad thing in a minute. Y'all, we're building up to it. We're going to get into the Vlad thing in a minute. We're just chopping it up like a good family. We're chopping it up. But the thing is, family, you know what the problem is with us? We think if we sit here and cop please and kiss ass and bow down and take this submissive posture and create things and give them away, that there's going to be some kind of reciprocal vibe from the people. And a lot of Negroes are just happy to get a couple of little crumbs of Spanish cooch thrown at them. And we got this vibe as black people here in America, foundational black Americans, too many of it. So, and we're waking up now, especially the young people. We got this thing where we're supposed to uplift everybody and take care of everybody else's needs first, and surely they're going to show gratitude at one point. And the opposite happens, ladies and gentlemen. The very opposite happens, and then we get confused why. Let me break it down. We're going to talk about the science of ingratitude. Instead of gratitude, people go out of their way to show ingratitude. Now, family, let me ask y'all this. On a personal level, some of y'all have friends. Have you guys noticed that the very people, some of your friends, especially your closest friends, in many cases, have you noticed like the people that you go out of your way to help? Some of your friends, you see some of your friends down bad or whatever, and some of your friends who's pretty close to you that you have gone out of your way to help. You've done them solids. You've done your friend a solid favor. You damn near saved their lives. You helped them out when everybody else abandoned them. You've had friends that you bent over backwards to help. You gave them your last. Have you noticed those are the first people that will stab your ass in the back, and they will stab you in the back the deepest? Have you noticed that? I can almost guarantee that has happened to you guys out there. Somebody who you went and did a favor, you did some things for, you helped that person, and that person turned around and stuck you in the back so damn deep. And you're like, damn, nigga, you stuck me in the back, dude? A girl? Bitch, you stuck me in the back? Woman, you about to get evicted. I saved you from getting evicted, and now you done stab me in the back? What the hell? Your family too. The people who you went out of your way to help, they stab you in the back the deepest. And you know why that happens, family? There's a science to ingratitude. And there's four things that you have to take in consideration when a person you've helped have turned around and stabbed you in the back. See, we get that on a massive scale with a lot of people from the Caribbean and Africa. We sit here and remember in the 60s, we got our heads bashed in. We done fought the government. We done all types of stuff to help these people. And when they come over, we patronize their businesses. We do a lot for them. And they turn around and talking, they say, we're all Akatas who don't deserve to live. And we're like, damn. This is why the FBA movement is so heavy right now, because a lot of us are learning just how much hatred some of these people have. A lot of people didn't know. Because, see, you didn't know because you don't really get in behind closed doors to talk to them. Now that you have social media and live spaces like Twitter Space and Clubhouse, where people are in their homes and they can just hop online and say how they really feel in these little chat rooms, a lot of people are like, damn, I didn't know y'all felt like that about us. There's a science to that type of ingratitude. Let's go into the four sciences of ingratitude. Now, the first thing you got to understand why people you help shows this type of ingratitude, because what happens is when you help people or when they have to come to you for help, what that does, we think we're doing a good thing and we think that they're going to be grateful, but in their minds, that magnifies an inferiority complex that they already have. The fact that they have felt inept, that they have fumbled a bag to the point where they have to go to other people for help, especially another black person, that magnifies an inferiority complex that they have. And nobody wants to feel inferior. A lot of people want to feel like, you know, anything they got it on their own recognizances. They got it on their own skills. And when you go to somebody for help and they throw a bone to you, that person seems like they're in a superior position over you. And that bothers certain people. Like, this is my friend, and now the balance is unequal. I'm not this person's equal no more. I'm not this person's equal friend. I'm now an inferior to this person because I had to go to this person to to get them to throw a bone at me. So now there's a resentment there. You see? There's a resentment there. Now, I'm not saying this to the family to not do good deeds. We always still try to do good deeds, because how somebody is going to receive that deed, that's up to them. Long as you do the good deed. Because sometimes you do good deeds for people and you're like, man, if I'm going to get people like this going to stab me in the back, man, damn that. We still continue to do good deeds, but don't do good deeds to the point where we're going to be devastated by it. And at the end of the day, where we put ourselves out there, where we're giving away all of our resources and we're uplifting people who want to just wipe us out. Yeah, that's like Judas. Yeah, Judas did that to Christ. Real talk. Now, another part of the ingratitude science, another reason why there's that resentment there, is because of entitlement. Because what happens is a lot of people who sit here and know that they got a friend like you who will bail them out, they can go to you for favors and they can go to you to help them out when they get in a bind. They go out here in the world and they make more reckless decisions. They can go out here and make more emotionally based decisions. They can go out here and make more gambling mindset decisions. And in the back of their mind, they can be like, well, hell, I got a buddy who can help me out. So I'm going to go out here and be as reckless as I can be. You see? They go out here and trick their money off or smoke their money off. And then when rent comes up, oh, damn, man, I tricked my money off. I was at the club messing my money off. I was buying weaves or whatever. But my homegirl, she'll hook me up. I go to her. You see? And then what happens is after a while, people say, hey, you know what? I can't keep, you know, giving you money. I'm not an ATM. I can't keep giving you money. I can't keep bailing you out. So I'm not going to help you out this time. And you got to do you. I can't help you this time. Then all of a sudden the resentment comes in. Oh, you ain't keeping it real. Oh, man, I knew you weren't shit. They already had this condescending, resentful mindset. And that just helped justify it towards the person who helped them. You dig? That just helped justify it. So people get this jive-ass sense of entitlement. Now, does that sound familiar with all of these people who we help out? And every time we want to give homage to our culture, they want to jump in and lay claim to it. That's a sense of entitlement, just like with the Latino and hip-hop thing. Well, I was in the Bronx, so I need 50-50 credit. Yeah. Anything y'all niggas get, I'm supposed to get too. So we're supposed to get 50-50 credit. That's entitlement, guys. That's this crazy sense of entitlement that they're supposed to get everything we're supposed to get. Notice whenever black folks are talking about getting something, a lot of these anti-black Latinos jump up talking about, well, what about us? We supposed to get that too. Oh, reparations? Oh, we supposed to get reparations first. How the black folks gonna get reparations in us? What? Remember that clip I played of J-Lo? All of me pulling this stuff. Where J-Lo was up there with these people from, I forgot, it was some kind of corporation, and the corporation gave some money to black women, and J-Lo threw some shade. J-Lo was like, yeah, I heard that you are giving millions of dollars to black women. I hope you're giving it to Latinas. Hope you do the same for Latina women too. Throwing shade. This entitlement, anytime if we get something, they're entitled to the exact same thing. We're not obligated to go for that, family. This is why this hip-hop conversation is very important. All of these groups, the minute we start talking about what we should get, we sit here as black folks, we create all of these damn programs to give tangibles to these groups, and the minute we talk about, okay, listen, guys, we've done enough for you guys. We done papered you up. Y'all got all types of money over here from our tax dollars. So what we're going to do now, family, since we got you guys together, we got you straight. Y'all set your businesses up and we're the ones patronizing your businesses and your nail shops. Okay, so right now we're going to focus on us, Foundational Black Americans, getting some tangibles. What? What about all people of color? All lives matter. Why y'all going to get some? Then the hating comes. All of these damn so-called people of color groups are the main ones hating. You dig? All of a sudden, you FBA niggas are a hate group. You see, we're telling all of these other people, just hold your own nuts. We're not, you know, if you want to go get your own money, go ahead and do that. But we are going to focus on us. We can't carry you. You niggas are a hate group. We are a hate group now after we done carried you for 50 damn years. You see? Let's get into the third one. The third thing, family. The third reason why people get resentful towards the folks who help them, they have this ingratitude, is because you can't front with the person who you had to go to with hat in hand. You can't front on the person who had to bail you out. And see, with us, let's keep it a buck, a lot of black folks, we like to put up fronts. People in general, but black folks, we like to put up fronts. Black folks like to get online, and a lot of people do. I won't just put it on us, but we love getting online, fronting, flossing, getting on Instagram in front of expensive cars, getting on TikTok at nice restaurants, drinking champagne, making everybody see or get the impression that you just got it going on. We love to show how ballin' and how we got it going on and how we popping and how life is lavish for us and how we doing it big and we are just popping champagne. All of that works online, but you know that there's a person over there, your friend, who had to bail your ass out, who had to give you money for an abortion, who had to help you get your apartment because your baby daddy threw your ass out. Your one best friend over here knows all your business. They know that you ain't balling. You see, you got that one friend over here who had to bail your ass out, and you can't front for your friend. And your friend ain't, the friend ain't even throwing it up in your face, but just the fact you know that there's somebody over there who knows that your ass was just down bad and they got dirt on you, that bothers you in the back of your mind. I got somebody who knows the real me. This person knows that I'm not balling like everybody online thinks I'm balling. So you got this cloud. That person who helped you, now it becomes a cloud on your floss. You see, the person who knows the real you, you look at that person as a detriment to all your front. So now what you have to do is even the score by trying to get or create some dirt on that person. So now you try to instigate a beef or try to find some dirt on the person who helped you so that you can kind of equal it up and balance it out. You see? It's a real interesting dynamic. And the fourth thing, family, the fourth reason why there's this resentment towards people who help you to a certain degree, sometimes, in many cases, sometimes people helping you out can be weaponized to a certain degree. People can weaponize it. And when they do, there's a condescension to it. And you can feel the condescension. Even though you accepted the help, you understand that this person is doing this to almost weaponize them helping you to a certain degree. You understand what that means? Like somebody will help you, but they'll kind of reason. They're like, oh man, damn. All right, nigga, here, just get this money. Here, get it, nigga. Get this money, but nigga, you owe me. It's that type of vibe. So you get real offended by that. Because sometimes some people can pull rank on you. That's what happens when you go to people with hat in hand. Sometimes they can pull rank on you. And that makes you resentful. Because sometimes helping people can be weaponized. Giving somebody something can be used as a weapon. You dig? Just like strip clubs. Like when you go to strip clubs, the girls give the lap dances or whatever, and the dudes give them money. Yeah, the dude is giving you something for you to just shake your little ass. But the dudes are giving the money to you in a condescending way to a certain degree. Notice in strip clubs, they throw the money at you. The money is like a weapon. They throw it in your face. They're smacking you on the ass with the money. The money actually becomes a weapon to a certain degree. And the girls can feel that. That's why a lot of girls don't like tricks. A lot of girls in the game, they have a disdain for tricks in the back of their mind because they understand that they're using the money as a weapon. That's why they got to go with hustlers and max. That's why they choose up on some players. because they have a psychological disdain for the tricks, because they know the tricks are weaponizing the tangibles that they're giving to them. You understand? It's a real deep dynamic. You can, again, weaponize helping people. You can help people almost as a way to insult them. I've done that. I do that to my enemies. You want to really piss your enemy off? Help your enemy. Psychologically, it messes with them. I've done that. Remember when Fraud Anista Jones, that Caribbean tether, who stays online hating on foundational Black Americans all the time, getting with the white supremacists against foundational Black Americans, talking all of that crap and kissing white males' asses and all that stuff. And remember some years ago, she was on Twitter begging for money because her car got towed or something, some janky BS that happened with her goofy ass. And her car got towed or something, and she was on Twitter begging for money to get her car out of impound. And then I gave her the money. I'm like, oh. She only needed like a couple of $100s, and I sent $200. Do y'all know that burned that woman's soul? That crushed her inside. That crushed her damn spirit. She actually gave the money back. She's like, I ain't taking this money. Oh, I hate him so much. I hate that bastard, Tariq. I hate him. That crushed her damn spirit, which I knew it would do. I knew that would tear her ass up. I did the same thing with old musty-ass Synthetic G. Remember, Cynthia G was talking greasy, and I sent her $100 to get a synthetic ponytail to match her bayang, and she took the money. Now, that made her look like a bum. She gladly took the money, and that made her look like a big bum. I knew what it was going to do. It made her look like the little clout-chasing bum she was. She took that money gladly and didn't even get the damn ponytail I told her to get. She's showed back up with that raggedy ass bayang and a damn head wrap. So she got my little money and tricked it off on some bullshit and didn't get the bayang, but it made her look like a thirsty clown. You dig? Yeah, sometimes you can use the money to weaponize. It can be used as a weapon. You dig? But see, again, that whole thing, when you help people and they have to come to you for help, that just wakes up this inferiority complex with them. That's why you have a lot of tethers come over here talking about how good they're doing. They like to come over here and pretend that we're doing better than you niggas. They're big on that. They know good and well they came from filth and deprivation and they needed us to help them. They know that, and that burns them up inside. Remember the video of that girl I played a couple of weeks ago, that African girl who was just on YouTube talking extremely greasy about us, talking about we're just cicadas and we're just useless. I mean, this woman was going in. So I did that video talking about her, and boy, she felt the heat. People were getting at her. So she did an apology video today, and it wasn't a real apology. It was fake apology. She was just basically copping pleas and, oh, I'm not going to even play all of it. I'm just going to play a little snippet. So she did a fake apology and I'm trying to understand you. I won't use a kata again. I'm trying to understand you Black Americans. I'm so sorry. But, you know, I don't have a slave mentality. So she was giving a lot of backhanded disses. But somebody asked her in the live, let me get a clip of that, because they were talking, she kept talking about culture, Black foundational Black American culture versus African culture, and somebody asked her, what is it in your culture, what culture do you have, what African culture has made an impact on the world like foundational Black American culture? And I want y'all to hear her answer, family. See, this is why I don't let people sit up and talk about this culture thing. We let people talk that culture nonsense. We are the only ones who got a real, real culture that is defined and redefined on a regular basis. We keep creating different parts of our culture. when you ask people about their culture, boy, that list gets real short, man. But hold on, this is her talking about the culture. Hold on, listen.
Name one aspect of African culture that has made a major impact on the world, like Black America. So you guys are going in on me. One aspect of African culture that has made a major impact.
Boy, she's thinking. She's thinking hard, ain't she? Hold on.
All your resources, you know, the resources from Africa, you know, like oil and shea butter. Mm-hmm. You guys thought I didn't know that. The shea butter you use has made an impact on your life and your beautiful skin. Because we all know melanin is beautiful. We can't lie about that. So the shea butter that derived from Africa is definitely a major impact.
Family. This woman sat up here and said the part of African culture that has made an impact on the world and our lives is shea butter. And she had to think long and deep for that, family. Family, shea butter has nothing to do with no culture. We should have been questioning these people and calling them out a long time ago with that culture thing. This woman said shea butter. Shea butter has nothing to do with culture. That's just nature. That's beyond a reach. That's so beyond a reach, family. Shea butter has nothing to do with culture. Whatever group of people are over there, there's going to be shea butter. Shea butter comes from trees. It comes from nature. Oil is not culture. That's just something that's already in the ground. That's not culture. That's the best this woman came up with. Lord. Let's keep it a bug, man. These folks, man, a lot of these people, man, they understand. They really don't have no culture popping. They've been sitting here projecting that stuff onto us. They don't really have no culture like that, and that's not an insult. That's why people have to leave. They don't really have a culture like that. I mean, we are the culture here. Foundational Black Americans, and don't let nobody ever forget that, family. Don't ever let nobody forget that. Anyway, fam, let's get into the Vlad thing. There's a lot of people in here for a late night broadcast like that. Y'all in here deep. Let me have y'all do me a favor. Number one, first, I need you to hit the subscribe button and then hit the bell notification. Y'all see the subscribe button? Hit that subscribe button. Then I need y'all to hit that share button and share this on Twitter right now. Share this on Twitter right now, ladies and gentlemen. Hit that share button. Share it on Twitter right now. Now, let me get into this Vlad thing. Now, family, DJ Vlad was chopping it up with DJ Academics. I just did Academics broadcast a month or so ago. Real good conversation. And my name came up. Now, there was an incident up at Vlad's broadcast. When did that whole thing happen with me and Tommy? That was damn near a decade ago, man. When did that all happen? When did that happen? I want to say that happened in 2014, right? Y'all help me out, family. If you can, help me out, family. I want to say that happened in 2014. You dig? I want to say it happened in 2014, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm not mistaken, family. But this was damn near a decade ago. And Vlad is talking about it now. And hold on. Sorry about that, guys. Let me play the clip. It's a short clip. And Vlad said some very interesting things. Vlad said some very, very interesting things. And let me play this clip right here. Hold on one second. Hold on. Let me get the audio going. Let me turn my music off. All right. Hold on one second. Where are we? All right. So this is Vlad with Academics. Hold on.
Okay. You may not agree with certain things that the person says. And I had Tariq Nasheed on my platform. Mm-hmm. It was actually a relatively good conversation, but it wasn't until maybe a couple months later I interviewed Tommy Sotomayor.
Yeah.
And Tariq Nasheed literally burst into the studio to like confront him.
Yeah.
And, you know, this whole situation just turned ugly and disrespectful. I'm like, yo, I give this dude a platform only for him to come and burst into my fucking studio because he got a beef with the dude I'm interviewing.
He gave me a platform, okay?
And yeah, yeah.
Tommy's saying I set him up, and then Tommy starts recording my phone calls, and I just say, and the Tommy Sotomayor shit, like, I didn't really realize him, but once, you know, when I look back at the interview, which I never put out, it was, like, very anti-black woman. You know what I'm saying? And I...
Oh, stop, Vlad. Okay, let's stop. Let's take our time with this. Okay. So Vlad said... Yeah. I gave him a platform. Vlad, and you're listening, Vlad. I already had a platform, Vlad. What platform did you give me? You didn't give me anything with your platform, Vlad. I already have a platform, Vlad. And when I went on your broadcast, I already had a bunch of number one movies under my belt, Vlad, and best-selling books under my belt, Vlad, and other very successful things that I've done, Vlad. So you didn't really do me no big favor, Vlad. And I have my own platform on YouTube here. I get the same amount of views, damn near, that you get, just with me talking by myself. I don't have to use a bunch of other public figures to put on my flat platform in order to get views. I get views on my own, the same amount, damn near. You understand? So you really didn't do me any favors, Vlad, at all. Vlad, I've done national and international television, Vlad. Come on, Vlad. You're not doing anybody any favors, Vlad. Yeah, Vlad tries to play this innocent role. You gave me a platform as if you put me on? Man, if you don't stop, Vlad. Lord, Vlad, who... Vlad got the game twisted. Boy, the vulture mentality is something else, ain't it? Hold on, let me play some more of this. Let me take it back and replay some of this. Hold on.
Agree with certain things that the person says, and I had Tariq Nasheed on my platform. Mm-hmm. It was actually a relatively good conversation, but it wasn't until maybe a couple months later I interviewed Tommy Sotomayor.
Yeah.
And Tariq Nasheed literally burst into the studio to like confront him.
Okay, and literally burst into the studio. Okay, now here's that Dolomite talk. He's acting like I went in there like Shaft, all right? Oh, here's that old Dolomite talk. Hey, this is that white man talk. You know, the suspected white supremacist is coming out, and they always make things extra. Yeah, he came in there. He came through the window with a rope. Oh, my God, he had a Molotov cocktail, and he had a machine gun. He came in. Oh, my God. He burst in my studio. I casually walked in there. I didn't burst in the studio. I just walked in there. What? No, burst in the studio. Yeah, the white folks like this, it's always some extra stuff. He came in there. Oh, my God. He had a leather jacket on. He was like, I'm going to get you, sucker. Oh, my God. Oh. According to Vlad, hold on. According to Vlad, I went in there like this. Hold on, this is me. I went in there like this. Hold on. Wait, this is how I went in there. Hey, come on, sucker. You jive turkey. Come on, jive turkey. Come on, sucker. So that's how I went in there, according to Vlad. According to Vlad, I just went in there like Richard Roundtree, all right? Stop it, Vlad. This is he has white man goggles. Okay, Vlad. I kicked in the door waving the 4-4. Yeah, I went in there like Shaft. He busted in there. Oh, my God. He busted in there, had a pit bull, and had a machine gun. And stop it, Vlad. Stop being white. Now he's talking white talk now. All right, hold on. Let me play some more of this. Hold on.
Sotomayor.
Yeah.
And Tariq Nasheed literally burst into the studio to, like, confront him.
Yeah.
And... You know, this whole situation just turned ugly and disrespectful. I'm like, yo, I give this dude a platform only for him to come and burst into my fucking studio because he got a beef with the dude I'm interviewing. And
yeah,
Tommy's saying I set him up. And then Tommy starts recording my phone calls. And I just say, and the Tommy Sotomayor shit, like I didn't really realize him. But once, you know, when I look back at the interview, which I never put out, it was like very anti-black woman.
Okay, now let's be clear. Vlad is so full of it. Vlad knew that the dude was on that anyway. Vlad, everything Crispy talks about is anti-black woman. That ain't no revelation. Vlad knew that. Everything Crispy says is anti-black woman. That dude, that's his whole platform is just crapping on sisters. That's why it was like, why you been bringing this dude on here? The only reason you brought him on here was to instigate the beef that we had. You were trying to get your little bag off of it, Vlad. That's why you put him on there. Then he act like, well, you know, I realized I really didn't want him on here. Like, hey, you were trying to put him on after me so that you can try to concoct a beef and try to instigate the beef even more so that you can monetize it. That's what you do, Vlad. That is your whole platform. You get people on your platform whose rivals, they're rivaling with each other, and then you promote it, and then you sit back and then let it fester in the streets. That's been your whole platform, and you've been getting called out for that, Vlad, for years. People have been calling you out for sitting up here instigating things and bringing people on to promote beefs, and then you let them out the door, and then it hit the streets. So now, when the beef was brought to your front door, now you want to cry foul and say it was disrespectful. No. If there's going to be beef that you want to get in the middle of and instigate, that beef came right to your front door and you didn't like it. You see, y'all don't like when the beef comes to your front damn door. So don't play those damn games out here. You knew what you were doing, trying to instigate conflict and bring somebody up who you know was beefing with me, and that's the only reason you brought him up. So when that thing came to your front door, do it over there in the ghetto, don't do it here, and the beef is over, beef is fine, but just not here, it's disrespectful. It's disrespectful for you to promote that type of stuff and instigate it, Vlad. That's what it is, homie. That's what it is. Let me play some more of this.
I set him up, and then Tommy starts recording my phone calls, and I just say, and the Tommy Sotomayor shit, like I didn't really realize him, but once, you know, when I look back at the interview, which I never put out, it was like very anti-black woman. You know what I'm saying? And I just said, you know something? I'm done with this whole fucking genre at this point. Yeah. All these dudes who are like anti-everything and whatever, and their claim to fame is just being edgy, you know, and don't really have actual talent behind what they do. You know, they're not like stand-up comedians or they're not artists or basketball players or whatever. I said, I'm cool with all this shit. I removed all the Tariq Nasheed shit. I never put out the Tommy Sotomayor shit. And I said, fuck this whole genre. I'm cool.
And by the way, you know.
Okay, so he's talking about people who ain't got no talent. I know you ain't talking about me, Vlad. And Vlad, don't sit up and act like, okay, that was the last straw. Vlad sits his ass on here. Vlad has all types of killers and mafia folks. And Vlad has all types of dregs of society on his joint. All right? Vlad has all types of dregs on his show. And now he's trying to act high and mighty. Vlad, you instigate all types of stuff. There's court cases where Vlad's name is popping up in court cases. People getting convicted based on stuff happening on Vlad's platform. Stop it, man. Don't sit here with that. You know, basketball man. Vlad, this man has instigated all types of stuff and get people on the platform and you asking them inappropriate questions and all of that stuff and then sitting back like you're innocent. And Vlad, you are talentless. Vlad, I'm a very talented, independently successful black male. Sir, I have had successes in damn near every entertainment genre, okay? I have had success in films. I have had success in books. I have had even successes in music, sir. My hobby, making R&B albums, those have been on the Billboard chart. So I've had relative success even with my hobby, which is music, something that I do just to mess around on the side. That is more successful than you, Vlad. My hobbies are more successful than you, Vlad. My lectures and events are all successful. See, Vlad, as a foundational Black American who never fled, I have enough talent to utilize my own name and be successful using my own name. Vlad, you can't get a YouTube click without mentioning another Black celebrity. See, that's where that resentment comes in. See, Vlad is a failed immigrant who failed over in Russia. His family failed over there in Russia. They couldn't cut it in Russia. They had to come over here and you had to eat off Black folks. And as a white man, that chaps your ass and you have a lot of resentment. That's why anything empowering, you have contempt for it, like Minister Farrakhan. Vlad said all that greasy stuff about Minister Farrakhan, and that's why a lot of people who was clicked up with him had to abandon Vlad. Because anything that has to do with Black empowerment, you don't like that, because if Black folks are woke, they're not going to be rocking with your platform the way they need to rock with it. You need Black folks to have a certain level of stupidity to sit here and watch some of the interviews that you put on, Vlad. You see, it's very exploitive. And there's a lot of contempt there. Now, Vlad really don't want to play that game with me. Vlad don't really want to play that game with me. Because, see, Vlad, listen, if it weren't for foundational Black Americans, your ass would still be over there in Russia drinking some vodka, combing the fur off a bear's ass. You would be down bad over there in Russia, struggling and starving. You need to thank the Black Americans who helped give your platform shine. You cannot talk about what talent I have or any other Black person have, because, sir, I have more talent and confidence than you can ever have. You came over here and made your whiteness work for you. And that's all it is. You're just another colonizer with a colonizer mentality. Another talentless hack who have to exploit Black people to make a buck. And you got mad when your exploitation of me backfired. I don't play those kind of games. You're not going to have me on your broadcast and then have somebody up there who's beefing so that you can sit there snickering and cockeying and kikiing while you throw fire on a beef. No, the beef will be right there at your front damn door, and you didn't like it. You didn't like that the beef came right to that ass. See, that's what I do. I'm not going to let it trickle down in the streets. We're going to get this shit straight right here on your platform, in your space, since you want to get in the middle of it and promote it. Now, how does that feel? Didn't feel good, did it? So that's how other Black folks feel when you instigate beefs, nigga, and put that shit out there in the streets like that. It don't feel good when that shit hits your front door. You try to throw a rock and hide your damn hand, and you don't like when that rock boomerangs back to your front door. See? Well, you need to stop instigating beefs with your platform. I have people on my platforms. I know what questions to ask and not ask. I had the great Nipsey Hussle on my show. Rest in peace. There's a lot of stuff that we could have talked about as far as the streets. I wasn't going to talk about that. I wouldn't put my brother out there like that. I am going to look out for my brother so that he don't say something inadvertently that would get him caught up. That's the FBA way, dude. You don't have that, because your thing is all about making you a quick buck off any type of beef that you promote. Even when I had my good brother Spider Loco on my broadcast, we talked about a couple of beefs, but we also talked about how to resolve that type of stuff and look at things from a positive outlook. We weren't trying to throw fire on some street stuff that was happening. That's how you're supposed to do stuff. You're supposed to have integrity. But if you are a culture vulture like yourself, Vlad, you don't think like that. because you got contempt for black society, black males in particular, because you don't have no talent and you have to sit on the sidelines commentating on the talented people that you bring on. You dig? So, Vlad, understand your lane. Your lane is being a beneficiary of white privilege, the welfare system, which is white supremacy, and your claim to fame is playing second fiddle to the black man. And I know that burns your ass. You got to play second fiddle. You don't have the talent to compete, so you have to report on the competitive. And I know that bothers you. I know that bothers you, brother. So, you can't talk about the talent that brothers like myself have, because I built a lane with my talent independent of the corporations out here. See, it's one thing to have a corporation put you on and you get to a certain level, but when you can do it without a corporation, that means you are extra talented. You are exceptionally talented. For me to get to the level that I'm on, doing number one movies, doing best-selling books without a corporate backer, that says a lot and that inspires others. You could never, Vlad, you could never do that on your own. So Vlad, stay in your lane, which is basking while you're in the shadows, basking on the sun and the light of black men. You understand? See, we got to get some straightening with these folks. See, like I said earlier, these folks eat off black people and they have this weird ingratitude. And this ingratitude turns into resentment. They have resentment for black people, especially successful black people. You see? They have resentment for it. And again, when I went up there, when that stuff was happening, you know, Vlad got real white. He was in the background, hella white. Hey, what's going on, Tariq? All his little black scent. You know, Vlad tries to talk with his little black scent every now and then. That black scent went out the window. When I ran up in there, oh, Vlad was very white. Hey, Tariq. What's happening, man? Oh, the black scent went right out the window. Hey, what's going on, buddy? You want to eat some Rice Krispie treats? I got some blueberry scones in the back, dude. Yeah, his black scent went right out the window. When things got real, the black scent went right away. It went. That's the first thing that goes is the black scent. When things get real, yeah. When he's instigating beefs and he thinks everything is all cool and gravy, yeah. How you? I heard you beefing with Whoopty Whoop. Yeah, how's that beef going? Yeah. Heard y'all on some rah-rah shit. And then when the beef comes to the front door, oh my God, guys, hey, I got some lentils in the back, guys. I got some boysenberry pie. We can have some. I got some vanilla lattes that we can all drink on, guys. Yeah, he gets real white when the thing gets real. Yeah, when I went up there, boy, Vlad was like this. The black scent was gone. Vlad was like this. Hold on.
I don't know the street name because I don't gangbang. I'm a white boy. I used to bang, but I dropped all that. I dropped it straight up because I'm not going to get in that life, and I don't want to be in that life. I want to be a white boy like me and you are. I want to be a regular person.
Yeah, I'm a white boy. I want to be white like me and you, dude. Hell out of here, Vlad. Anyway, man, how many of you? We're in here heavy. We got like over 5,000 people in here. We are in here heavy. But anyway, I got to get up out of here, man. I think we had a good conversation on tonight's broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to go to my website, official FBA.com. Go to HiddenColorsFilms.com. Buckbreakingmovie.com. Check out my successful films, ladies and gentlemen, and the new movie American Maroon coming soon. And we are still trying to come up with a title for the hip hop documentary we're going to start filming on next month. So y'all stay tuned for that. Anyway, guys, man, you guys have a great week. I'll chop it up with you later on this week. Papi Akute and Lola Vuve to the family. Peace.